bring Steve back up, and Steve and Kit are prepared. We've got time for questions. Typically, the drug trend report and this discussion generates a lot of questions, comments. So please raise your hand. We've got microphones. Anyone? You guys knew all this before you got here? There we go. Can you identify yourself, please?
Kevin Sullivan, Fire Officers, New York. How does this compare with the draconian, you know, you have to do it, the select, the actual performance? You mentioned the fact that, you know, people feel good about it, but is it as good?
Of course, you're always going to get better results out of your mandatory programs because you're getting 100% of the people doing exactly that behavior. The trade-off is that not 100% of people probably had that intent or were happy with not having the choice, not having that feeling of control. So there's you're making a bit of a trade-off there. You won't get the mandatory-like results. You'll get near mandatory-like results. You get pretty darn good results out of these programs.
You know, you break up a really good point. And one of the things that's really subtle about this is if you don't preserve choice, these don't work very well, right? What people want, when you think about your intent, one of the things you really want is you want that preservation of choice. And what really makes these things extraordinary is you can get, as Kit said, near mandatory-like effectiveness, but by preserving choice. And that's actually what really excites your employees, and that's why you actually don't get any calls back, is because I still have the option. If I really want that more expensive drug, if I'm really convinced the brand is the right thing, I can still have it. It's just going to cost me more in the copay, but I can still have it. And so preserving choice and being able to get mandatory-like outcomes is just an extraordinarily new place to be. And this doesn't come about because you give more educational brochures, you manipulate the copays more. It truly is just changing the paradigm. It's really exciting.
Yeah. At the risk of piling on, I know from the from the Select Home Delivery experience, is that maybe the benefit to the human resources department was as important as anything we've done, because it allowed people to offer something to their workforce that had choice. You know, it's let me digress a little, okay? And I know I'm a marketer, all right? I get that. And so don't get lost on the value of, and let me go back to an older reference here. Tastes great, less filling. Much more than an advertising slogan. Much more. Lots of science. The industry was, they can make something taste great, and they can make something less filling. Can they get to the sweet spot? In our industry, right? Great change, minimal noise. Same thing. Only product line we've seen in healthcare that can really deliver that. We could get great change and we can get minimal noise, but the sweet spot is something only the behavioral sciences got us to, not the next four color brochure. That's what's great about this.
See a question in the back.
Hi, my name's Steve Smith. I'm with the Laborers in West Virginia. And I just wanted to give you a, kind of an observation of the home delivery system, you know, from our perspective. We've got about 6,000 lives. We went mandatory home delivery, you know, through Express Scripts back in 2005, 2006 timeframe. I got to tell you, it only made 15 months in our organization. And the biggest problem that we had was on the delivery side. The chairman of our fund, three scripts delivered to his residents, all ruined, three in a row. We have nine locals, and at least one prominent person in each local had a problem with at least one delivery that we documented back. And the Express Scripts folks was great, you know, in our working with them. But as a result, though, we had to drop mandatory home delivery and go back the other way. But it did help us a lot, that experience of going mandatory, because about 50% of the people that had to go mandatory at the time never went back. They're still on the home delivery. So that's just kind of our experience. And I, you know, we're a rural state, so maybe, you know, other people aren't affected that way, but it sure affected us.
Yeah, your point is really well taken. In fact, one of the things, and this is why the tour yesterday, if you don't get mail right, in the end, it is at the individual's level, right? And if you don't get it right, if it's not happening predictably as you expect, people are going to, aren't going to accept it. And so over the course of the last couple of years, we've had to get much better. And so if you think about even your own computer, when you turn on your computer, if it doesn't boot up quickly, you know, back 10 years ago, if it took 3 minutes to boot up, you were fine with that. If it's not booting up in 30 seconds now, you think you have a piece of junk as a machine. And the same thing happens even in mail. If it's not showing up predictably, in good shape, you're not going to stay with it, nor should you. And so we have had to raise the bar there also. And so that's partly why the tour yesterday is because we recognize there's been hangups in the past. We truly believe that the quality of it has become much better. It's more predictable. And so it's not just that you have to activate the intent. We have to deliver on our side. We have to make the experience seamless for the member. We have to offer them that concierge. It has to be simplified. And so when you flip things over, when I make it, when I default you into the right behavior and you got to work to get out of it, just like with the 401k, that's when it's effective. So we really appreciate your comments and your observations.
We have one back there.
Good morning.
Can you please identify yourself?
Yes. Good morning. Cynthia Gary, representing Law Enforcement Health Benefits in Philadelphia. Just a clarification on the Value Network pharmacies. Is there a list of pharmacies that you can send your members to, which would save us about $1.60 per script? Is it the normal CVS, Rite Aid, Walgreens? And if there is a list, where can we obtain that list? Another question right behind that one. Is there an incentive for the members?
Great questions. Thank you. So to your first question about the list of Value Network pharmacies. So the way that the Value Networks work is, as an organization, you know, you have several choices. You can decide that you want to have everybody in a single broad pharmacy network, or you can move members to maybe a little bit tighter of a network of pharmacies, or even to the most aggressive Value Network, that tightest network of pharmacies. And each of those pharmacy networks does have a set number of pharmacies that are in that. But as different clients come on, if there's not enough of those pharmacies in the areas in which your members, your employees live, then we'll work with you to make sure that there's enough of those smallest network pharmacies available to your members. There's a lot of different ways to help your members move into those different tighter, more effective, more cost-saving networks. If you talk to your account team, they can help you kind of navigate those different programs and figure out what's best for you based on your culture and your organization. In terms of the second question and the savings for the member, it really depends on how your benefit plan is designed. And again, I would point you back at your account team because they can help you have a more specific answer to that question.
Kit, I would like to introduce the audience to Jake Cedergreen, who's our Vice President of Channel Strategy, and he can maybe drill down a little deeper to that first question. Okay?
Definitely. Hi there. Nice to be here and hope to help you with that. I'm actually presenting in a breakout session this afternoon that will help answer even more questions around not just your maintenance medications, but how you optimize your acute medications. And your question specifically around the networks and how do I get a list of the networks that are in my area. We've got a fantastic network team that works around the clock to create networks, not just for our global audience, but also in certain cases on a more specific basis. So we do have those standard lists that we can help you with, but in addition, try to help you understand that certain drugs are best filled through certain pharmacies, and the way and the the approach that the physician is taking and the purpose for the treatment will drive that need. So in an acute care situation, you know, we want to make sure that you have a reasonable travel distance. And so that was part of what Kit is referring to and helping us do a geo-access analysis in your territory, understanding where your members are, and the account teams can help you access that information.
Thank you, Jake.
Thanks for the question.
We have a question here, please.
I'm Roger Merrill from Purdue Farms. We had we do chicken. We had pre-chicken for breakfast, and I presume we're having chicken for lunch today. So, y'all did a spectacular job, as you always do. This is why we come to this show. You did a great job. My question involves unintended consequences. So, as scientists, we do some experiment or some study, and we always find something we hadn't anticipated. What have been the unintended consequences? You're now several years into this consumerology stuff. What have we learned that we didn't think that we would learn? For example, our dropout rates go up. I opted for it, but I really didn't like it, and so I just gave up. Sort of like when you're on hold on the voice activated system, and finally you just give up. And the credit card company thinks it was a success because you didn't complain. It was a failure because you didn't answer. What are the unintended consequences? Yeah,
I will actually handle one, and then I'm gonna ask Bob Nies to help us. One of the things that really was crucial, and we didn't learn this until we actually tried it. When we first rolled out Select Home Delivery, for instance, we actually worked very hard with the HR office, and we communicated as a team wildly effectively. As we did more and more clients with this, some of the clients actually wanted to put the program in, but wanted to use a different communication plan. And we found that the communication plan is just as important as the actual program itself. It actually is integral to the part of the program. And so we actually had a client drop out early on because it wasn't working for them because the communications weren't right. And so for us, that was clearly unanticipated. We thought this would just run, and it didn't. And so that would be the one I could remember the best. I don't know, Bob, if you have others.
Sure. Hi, everyone. I'm Bob Nies. I'm the chief scientist at Express Scripts. There's sort of two things, Dr. Merrill. One is, although we've, you know, given this sort of a high-end sheen, these programs, this choice architecture that Kit's been talking about, either active choice, stopping people and asking, do you want this, do you want that, or opt-out, we put people in the most aggressive programs and give them a chance to opt-out. Once that happens, the programs are essentially the way the programs have always been. And they perform just like the programs have always been. So when somebody ends up in step therapy, the data clearly show they act as though, they behave as though they would if we had enrolled the entire population. So whatever's causing people to opt out or actively choose seems to be unrelated to how the program works after that. So you can think of these as a more sophisticated way of enrolling people in our standard programs. That's the first, and that is a little bit surprising to me, but clearly that's how the data are falling out. The other finding, which I think is interesting, and we're sort of, I think, triangulating on it, is people have very strong feelings about choice. And those feelings are, they almost seem as though they're 180 degrees apart or in opposition. In other words, people act as though having a choice is one of the most valuable things in their life. If you don't give them choice, they are really upset. And at exactly the same time, people act as though making a choice is one of the most difficult things in their life, and they will avoid it at almost all costs. And I think part of what's happening with these active choice and opt-out programs is we're doing both. We're preserving individual choice, but if the patient decides not to engage in it, good things happen. And to me, that is a real interesting insight, and obviously a practical value for the people here at the Outcomes Conference. Thanks.
Any question over
here? Another question over there?
Yes. Hi, Diane Houston Crockett from AmeriGroup Corporation. I have a question about behavior. So the member is getting their medications on time every month. How do you know the member is actually taking the medication? And the second part of his question is that what steps have been made to engage the physician and patient behavior? You talked about patient-centered medicine before, and how does that impact whether someone is really taking the medication?
Yeah, two great questions. So the first question is the, we have the physician issues, and then how do we know the patients are taking their medications? The first question, as you know, the state of the art is using medication possession ratios. You're exactly correct that that is actually a relatively bad surrogate for knowing adherence. And so tomorrow in this room, Brian Size is actually going to present on all the data we're doing around adherence. And so I'm not going to steal his thunder, but I think you're going to get really a comprehensive answer tomorrow about how we actually know some of the tools we've been using, some of the new technologies that are available to us that truly get to this issue about adherence. And so if you can hold on for 24 hours, you're going to have someone actually much more qualified to give this answer than myself. As far as the physician, and this is going to come up in many of the breakouts today, the physician has actually been somewhat out of the loop when it comes to adherence. Physicians actually want their patients to be adherent, but all of you who've had the experience in the physician's office, because of the shortening of those interactions, the doctor's ability to both assess and to participate in adherence actually is being diminished. And so we are working more than ever to actually provide them assistance. A person you'll meet during this conference, Jessica Ciccolello on our team, is our person on point for working with the physicians. We're doing a lot of this through e-prescribing and the new technologies and the new downloads we can give doctors on actually medication history. And so we are giving to the doctors a better look at their patients' adherence than we ever have before. But it's partly going to take training on our part because they're going to have to know how to use these things, how to actually ask for these things. But you'll hear from the teams both in specialty and traditional talk about how we have to empower these doctors, we have to get them more on board, and we have to do it in a way that's respectful to their time because they just have these huge time barriers that are coming up. So hopefully you can wait 24 hours and get a more comprehensive answer from Brian tomorrow.
Right there. Please identify yourself. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Maggie Beauchamp with San Diego Schools. And I wanted to talk about the mail order program. We spent a good year and a half trying to get that in place in our school districts, fighting unions who felt that this was a takeaway. And it was a real difficult process to get that through. So I want to thank Bassam, who's our account rep, who came out endlessly trying to talk to our schools and help with that. But also wanted to say thank you for the tour yesterday at the mail order facility, because that helped me get a perspective on the accuracy and our one very difficult district who fought to put this in place is now very, very happy with the program and the success. So my question to you is, do you have any marketing materials that can help us about the facility and what it's about and the accuracy? Because I felt that this was a huge success for us in our schools.
Thank you. I'll take that. Would you like to sit up here for the rest of the conference? I can get you a really nice, comfortable chair. I am going to point over here to John Renlob, and I'm going to connect John with you, and we'll provide a channel to get you the materials you need, okay? You see how well I'm doing this?
John, if you want to stand up.
It's a righty, heck of a system I've got here.
Yeah.
All right, but thank you, and I'm glad it worked for you, and thanks for your confidence in us and those kind remarks about us. Thanks.
Yeah, I do actually want to add one point, though. Because of these select solutions, some plan sponsors have felt that this is actually not a change in the benefit because they don't change the copay. And so not everyone looks at this as a benefit change. So you can actually preserve choice, put this in place, sometimes off the cycle of the contracts with the unions. But it's looked at, as you can imagine, differently across the country. But some unions have actually felt of it that because you preserve choice, it's not mandatory, and it doesn't involve a copay change. It's not just the mail, but the step therapies and other things. It can actually be done off cycle with the contracts.
We have a question over there to the left, Steve.
Hi, my name is Janice Marsteller. I'm a pharmacist with Paramount Healthcare in Northwest Ohio, part of ProMedica Healthcare System. And so many of the things you've been talking about are really exciting to me because I've been kind of in the background talking about the same things for about the past 3 years. And with the healthcare reform that's just come through with accountable care organizations and all the opportunities really that exist to reform our healthcare system into something that works better than it currently does. And certainly with the including the physicians, including adherence with patients, those are all the really big topics we're dealing with right now. As a health plan, we have all regulatory programs, including commercial members, CMS, Part D members, we have Medicaid, we have our own large employer group, but we also have the entire health system that we need to reshape and reform. Is there any discussion internally, and I can, you know, kind of have my ideas of how some of these things would work, but is there any formal effort on the part of Express Scripts to start thinking about blending these programs with the initiatives that integrated health systems such as ProMedica are doing to advance the accountable care organizations and control with public programs and so forth?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, you know, it's dynamically changing, and the issue is, can we actually take this even further? So let me give you a couple ideas. This has enormous implications, and that's why we're so excited. We actually want other companies, we want you to actually understand this intent behavior, because we believe if you can activate it, you can revolutionize not just your pharmacy program, but your entire medical program. Think about this, for instance. I'll give you just one example of a experiment. Larry told you we experiment our own employees. Last year at the holidays, we know that people put on weight around the holidays. They usually gain 1 to 2 pounds, and unfortunately, they often keep those pounds for the rest of their lives. And so we at Express Scripts decided we're going to have a walking program, and we're going to let you walk with George Paz, our CEO, and we're going to walk you back to better weight. And so what we did, without telling George or anyone else we were experimenting on, is that we had two lectures. The first lecture was we had one of our medical directors talk to the employees, tell them about how good it is to walk, and we asked at the end of the lecture, how many of you plan to show up to walk? And about 85% of the hands went up. The next day, unbeknownst to this medical director, we did the exact same thing. He gives the talk. We ask people, how many of you plan to walk? 85% of the hands go up. The second day, though, the one change we did was we said, okay, those of you who raised your hands, we want you to just sign a card that says you're going to walk, and it gives us permission to put on your Outlook calendar the time of the walk. We are pre-committing you to walking. When the walking program started in January, of the first group, only 23% of the people showed up. Of the second group, 2/3 of them showed up. No money, I didn't bribe them, no education, it just was pre-commitment. We believe you can actually do this for colonoscopies, mammograms, preventive care. There are all sorts of tools in the behavioral sciences. Once you understand that you have to just activate intent, it changes how you think back at the office. And that's what we think is so powerful about this. And so we're actually working with the accountable care organizations, with other plans on how you actually marry all this together. So we appreciate your support. We really believe that's the future.
Thank you. Joe Rogerson from Rosenkiernan in Albany, New York. We've had a lot of clients that we've done select home delivery with, and we've had quite a bit of success. But we had one client that we did this with, where, and the lady from San Diego Schools made me think of this, who had a very active anti-home delivery union leader, and they were very successful at convincing people that there was some trick here and this was all some scam. Do you have any advice for how do you deal with that kind of situation?
Yeah, let me take the first shot at that. The value proposition around home delivery is documented and very, very strong. And I'm talking about based on the data around therapy adherence, so forth and so on, the savings. I don't think there's any trick to that except to figure out the best way to make that case as strong as it could be to that individual or that group. In other words, we don't need new data. We don't have to develop something we don't have. we have to present it in a forceful, engaging manner, because it is really an overwhelming case. So work with us, and let's get this, if this is still an issue, let's get this particular person, let's get the right person in front of this person, let's get the right materials in front of this person, let's figure out something, whether we could do a video conference with this person. So let's just work on it, because the case is very, the jury's in. I mean, the jury is in. Well, the comment was it's a small community, and right, there's no question that there's going to be an influence possibly from the local retailer, the independent pharmacist, and, the marketplace votes on what the best value prop, Blockbuster's not doing that good in the advent of Netflix, and, they don't apologize. Things move on.
In my experience, the loudest voice, who's that loudest naysayer, if you can do exactly what Larry's doing and get that person to see that perspective, that person will still have the loudest voice, but now it'll be saying that right message and saying the message you want them to be saying. So if you can turn them around, that person can be a great champion for you as well.
We have time for one last question. I know who it's going to be from. Standing up.
Greg Wilson from the ARCS Ohio Collaborative, as well as the Ohio State University Health Plan. Wanted to reiterate what Dr. Miller stated earlier. I know who the group is that implemented and then pulled back. I was the director of pharmacy benefits for another organization. Same demographics. Learn from their mistakes. The key to it is communication and rapid and ongoing communication to ensure that the individuals know about the program and the intent of the program. The difference between their program that had a lot of blowback and the same demographics with state teachers' retirement systems was we had next to no blowback whatsoever. And the directive was completely different. And to your point, going to customize communications and going down that road because you feel as though you want to have more control as an organization isn't necessarily the best choice because it dilutes the overall content of the message. So just wanted to say that, and you can have similar demographics and have totally different outcomes.
Yeah, the only thing I have to say is you get the chair next to her up here next time. So
right, it's gonna
thank
be a
you all very
seat.
Much.
All right, thank you guys. Thank you very much. Good job.